This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Media Splode 46, Dune Part 2, and What Should We Watch Next Challenge.
Round, round, get around, I get around,
yeah, get around, round, round, I get around,
I get around, round, round, I get around, round, round, I get around.
Hello, welcome to my fanboy Media Split episode 46. We're talking about Dune Part 2 and the conclusion of the What Should We Watch Next Challenge. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And Ron Richards.
Hey, I'm so excited to be here with you.
And we're back with our monthly Media Split show that was unlocked by our patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. Thanks for being a patron. This is the show where we talk about non-comic book media, mostly, as opposed to the other shows where we talk about comic book stuff. So, spoilers. We're going to be reviewing Dune. There'll be spoilers in that for sure, but just in case, keep your eye on the show notes if you're concerned. A lot to do, guys. A lot to jump into. So why don't we just jump into our regular opening segment. What have you been enjoying since we last spoke?
By the way, like, we're back to there's too much to watch.
I've never left that platform.
I know. But, well, it does ebb and flow. Like, I finish series, and then, like, we're like, oh, God, what should we watch? I guess we'll start this, whatever. And now I'm definitely in a spot where, like, my little app, I'm like, oh, my God, I've got so much to watch.
Well, Apple TV launched like four shows that I want to watch.
And yeah,
I
don't have time to watch. Apple TV definitely has been firing on all cylinders. Yeah. And then Star Trek Discovery came back. I know, Connor, you don't love it, but it's the last season. I want to watch that. You know, like there's a lot of stuff going on. But a byproduct of that was that you got to make decisions, right? And so there were two shows on the docket that both are, you know, in the historical drama kind of world and made a choice, right? So there is Manhunt on Apple TV Plus and Shogun on FX. And my wife was really excited about Manhunt because she read the Josh, you and her bonded on the fact that you both read that book, right?
Oh, yeah, Connor too. Like we are down with that book.
So she was super into watching Manhunt. So I'm like, fine, we'll get on the weekly train for Manhunt and I'll catch up on Shogun at some point. And then the past month went by and the Shogun episodes were just stacking up and I'm seeing it being talked about, seeing stuff. So I'm like, all right, I just got, you know, whatever. So I just started watching Shogun on myself and my God, it's fantastic.
Oh, it's stellar.
It's stellar. It's riveting. And what I love about it is the fact that 75% of it is in Japanese. So you can't do anything else other than watch it because unless you know Japanese, you need to watch to read the captions.
And that tells you how much I like it because I'm one episode back, but I've watched a ton of them and I have to do nothing else when I do it. And Lindsay's not watching it. So I find the time.
No, yeah, you have to find the time. And it is just like the actors themselves and the characters they're inhabiting and the world that you're in. And I'm familiar with the James Clavell book. I remember when the original Shogun miniseries or whatever, the event. Well, I remember being a kid, my mother being really into it because she had read the book and watching that. Richard Chamberlain, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm familiar of it, but all I know is that like samurai, feudal Japan, 1600s, you know, English sailor. That's all. I just knew the basics of it. And I'm purposely not looking up on Wikipedia, the book or anything to see what happens because I want to know how this all plays out. And it's like a political thriller intrigue set in the world of 1600 Japan and the strategy and the plays and the subtlety and the Japanese culture, which is personally to me very, very foreign. I don't know, like one of my blind spots is Japanese and Asian kind of culture and history of all that stuff. So I just find it absolutely fascinating. The guy playing Blackthorn, Cosmo Jarvis, is a delight to watch.
And that's the thing. And you know, like Toranaga, who's Hiroyuki Sanada.
Who you recognize from John Wick, probably. That's what his
I don't. I only saw the first one years ago.
Well, a lot of people are like, oh, he was the Japanese guy in John Wick. You know, like
tons of presence. Like, yes, this is the Lord of Everything, and I understand it. And Anna Sawai, who I was like, why is she familiar? And it's because she's going to be in something you talk about later.
She's in Monarch, So I'm watching the two of those at the same time. Like, is this the same woman? I'm like, oh, it is. Right?
It didn't occur to me because she's so different.
And honestly, like I'm gonna talk about Monarch in the next segment, but like she's better in Shogun than she is in Monarch. Like she is doing an amazing job in Shogun.
Right. So just to fit it back in the Cosmo Jarvis you mentioned, like to me, and I hate to be like the white guy, but I'm watching him like bumble around and try to be a good guy, but kind of be dumb. You know, like movies that have big dumb Affleck?
Yep.
Like in Gone Girl, he's big dumb Affleck. He's not stupid, but he's just a little bit like, I don't know what to do here. And as he's getting more comfortable, he's just so perfect. He's so out of place.
And there's something so great about Cosmo Jarvis and his cadence and the delivery of lines and just like the, you know, like, you know, the I can't even do the impression, but it just, you know, it's like my ship and my men. And I would like to, you know, like it's very, you know, like it's.
I mean, I don't mean to say he's bumbling because he's not, because he's getting more comfortable, which makes it even better. Because and it's not funny. He's just confused.
My one criticism about Shogun is that I would like to have some meter of time. You get a sense that time has elapsed, but I don't know how, like, has Blackthorn been trapped in Japan for a year, 6 months? Like the latest episode, he's speaking Japanese in the marketplace and buying stuff. So clearly he's learning. And so you get the sense that more time has passed, but I don't know how much time has passed. Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's just one thing, but minor criticisms. So good. And then on the other side of the coin, the show I committed to on a weekly basis, Manhunt, which we had very high hopes for. It's the Apple TV Plus show that's telling the story of chasing John Wilkes Booth after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, right up both of your guys' alley. It's just been a letdown for me. It's ham-fisted and just like...
I hate to say that was kind of my take too. Love the James Swanson book.
The book is terrific.
It's one of my favorite history books of all time. He's a great historian, but he's a great storyteller. And so I know this story very well.
Yep.
And I know the characters very well. And I don't think it's bad all the time. But ham-fisted is definitely a thing. And other than, oh, Christ, what's his name? I want to call him Brutus.
Tobias Menzies, right?
Tobias Menzies.
Yeah.
I mean, he's riveting.
He's great as Edwin Stanton. He's fantastic.
Yeah, except the thing is, you know what Edwin Stanton looks like?
Not that.
Not at all.
Well, it's funny. It's funny. We were watching it and my wife was like, oh, Stanton had a big beard. I'm like, everybody had a big beard back then.
But like a big one.
Yeah, like, and he was kind of round and he had a little round glove. I'm trying to remember who played him in Conspiracy. But either way, like, it's nothing like him. The doggedness, like the attitude, all that stuff is actually there. Like he... Right. Fell real hard for Lincoln over the course of that. Also read A Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin. And I think the guy who plays Booth is pretty good, but it's really hard for me to not see him as like the schlubby guy from A Plot Against America. He was the kid. Or as the guy in Masters of the Air, like at the same time. I think he's doing a good job, but yeah, a lot of it. What the fuck is Patton Oswalt doing in there?
Right. Well, yeah, I've enjoyed that.
And then Matt Walsh. Like, I'm like, no.
So my two biggest criticisms of it, the book, the original book, is not a drama book. It's a work of nonfiction telling what happened.
It's written as a thriller, though.
Yeah. Right. Written as a thriller, but even my wife, who read the book, was like, it's so weird that they're taking that book and then doing a TV show and doing like a, you know, fictional, not fictionalized, but you know, based on reality drama with all of the B plots and like, let's introduce a character to tell this point of view story and let's do this. And it just kind of takes away from what should be a riveting chase and like investigation. And it flirts with that at times. Like there's been a couple episodes where it's like, oh, cool. I see how they're doing. Cause I was like, how do you do this in 1865? Right. How do you do a manhunt? And like, that's
sort of procedural.
And the similar criticism I have for Shogun, I have for Manhunt, which is I know from history that it was 12 days, but there is no time meter in what is happening. I don't know how long or short stuff is happening. And then you've got Stanton going from DC to Montreal to New York to DC. The Game of Thrones problem is like, wouldn't that take like a day and a half to get to Montreal?
Ron requires an on-screen time clock at all times.
That's new. That has not been a thing I've heard from him before, but clearly he's like, all right, I don't have time for this.
Well, listen, it goes back to Goodfellas and the Parkways. I just want to know how you're getting from point A to point B, you know?
Oh,
I haven't started watching this yet, and I'm going to no matter what the reviews are, but it's got to be all the more painful because David Simon was originally developing this show
right
for HBO, and that show never went anywhere. So it's got to be doubly painful that this is not as good as whatever that would have been.
So ultimately, my whole thing is that like I had a choice, and I chose poorly.
Like at the end of the day.
Yeah, but I'm all caught up on Shogun, and now I'm on the weekly bandwagon for that, and Manhunt's going to be done soon. I'll be glad we watched it. But
listen, if you're not working with Manhunt, Ben Franklin just started.
And it does not look good.
Okay, I'm going to very quickly break in. I watched a little of it last night, and I was like, I'm too tired, so I turned it off. But what I noticed right away, I was like, oh, this is like a prestige show. Like, it was money on the screen. It was like John Adams type of.
Yeah,
it's the same writer as John Adams.
I know that. And so I for some reason, I just pictured it being cheaper, I guess. Yeah. Anyway, so I'll report back in, but I was really shocked.
Yeah, we're probably going to watch it for the same reason that we all go, I'm like, oh, this is not, I don't know if I'm going to rush to watch it as much as I rush to watch Manhunt.
I really want to watch Sugar.
I've heard good things about Sugar. So my two things I need to watch that are high on my list are Sugar on Apple TV Plus and Ripley on Netflix.
When Ben Franklin started, I was like, oh, and she's like, what? I go, he's my favorite founding father. And I said it completely seriously. She's like, you have one? I was like, yes, I have a list if you'd like it. I have a least favorite founding father.
What did she say?
She was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But it's like, I live with you. You're my best friend. It's like 20 years together. And she's like, I guess. Just if that's going to be you.
All right. Anyway, so those are what I've been watching.
Yeah.
Josh, how about you? So you watched Manhunt, and what else you watched?
Yeah. So we were looking the other day, and I saw Baby Driver on Netflix. And I was like, you know what?
Oh,
yeah. I never watched this because it happened in the Kevin Spacey goes down phase, and like it kind of disappeared.
No. I saw the theaters.
Yeah, I saw it in the theater too.
Yeah.
Either way, I hadn't seen it. And I was an Edgar Wright movie, and I love Edgar Wright. And we started watching, and I was like, this is so much fun. How did I miss this?
Yep.
They kept changing around who the big bad was, and I thought that was really interesting. And it was so strange in that Edgar Wright way, doing sort of a straight up action movie. And then the other thing that sort of got me is I'm looking at John Hamm. I was like, this guy's amazing because there's a couple of John Hamms. There's the John Hamm from Mad Men that we all got to know and love. And as we know, he's never, ever done another thing like that. He encapsulated that character. And then everything after that was like doofy, funny guy. You know, he had a couple of like dramatic roles, but kind of were neither here nor there. And then he was just in Fargo where he was a completely different dude. And I was like, wow. And then I got to Baby Driver and I was like, wow, that's a whole other side. And I was just really impressed by that. You know, and like there was like a little bit in the middle where Jamie Foxx shows up and like he's really being stereotypical and stupid. And then he disappears quickly. And I really love that sensibility of Edgar Wright. And I feel like I've missed him. Like it's been a while. What was the last movie?
It was the horror film.
What I love about Edgar Wright and its present in Baby Driver is Edgar Wright's masterful use of editing and music, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, the music was great.
To have the gear shift changing in the car during the car chasing to the beat of the song was just like, there were so many scenes where he just destroys with audio in that regard.
You're like absolutely fantastic. Right. Yeah, there's a couple I noticed like that too.
His last film was Last Night in Soho, which was not good.
Yeah, that was not good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you know, it felt like, you know, it's the same thing when Scott Pilgrim comes out, people just don't get it really. And it becomes a cult picture, but it wasn't like a big success. And I was like, all right, I love this guy's stuff. And I, you know, not just in the context of Simon Pegg or whatever, but it was just, it was nice to be like, oh, this is something that I missed at the time. And it's totally what I felt like, you know, watching and having
just to
fun.
Be clear, it made $226 million on a $34 million budget. It was a huge hit.
That's great. Yeah. So,
Like, did I feel like it kind of came and went?
It was a huge hit.
I don't know if it was a huge hit. I don't know if you...
$226 million off a $34 million is a huge hit.
I mean, it's a huge hit in regards to the amount of money it made in regards to its budget, but it wasn't like zeitgeist absorbing everyone talking about this movie hit.
Like a Shaun of the Dead was, or like...
Yeah.
I mean, I would say Shaun of the Dead's more of a cult classic than this was.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's fair. But I mean, even in that way, it kind of like it came, whatever, it came out and made its money, never heard it mentioned. And that's right when streaming ticks up and we all lose track of everything and whatever. But
it's a good,
I'm not here to have an argument. It was a fun movie. I was glad I caught up with it.
I'm glad you watched it. It's a good movie. I wish you could have saw it in the theater.
That would have been fun.
I love a good car chase movie, you know, like, and this definitely, it checks that box for sure.
Well, you could go through it and there's certain parts you're like, that doesn't make any sense, but you didn't care.
Right. Yep.
Like, I don't think I like that movie, but it doesn't matter.
That explains a lot about the last few minutes.
I was the one advocating that it was a huge hit. I mean, that would be the opposite if that made sense. I've been disappointed with most of his movies for at least a decade, I think.
I didn't like This Is the End, but I was really looking forward to it.
Let's see. Two things. One, two nights ago, I went to see Holiday. It was another revival. It's a 1938 George Cukor, Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn screwball comedy. Terrific.
Classic. Film.
Yeah. And it was a brand new print from UCLA. It was nice and clean, even if, you know.
At the New Beverly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really fun. Crowd was super into it. It has a lot to say about class and what it means to live. Is it work or is it freedom or what? It was a funny movie. And Cary Grant really plays off his vaudeville skills in that one. It's really, really fun to watch. But I didn't really watch a lot because two of the weeks between the last time we did the show and now I was out of town. So I wasn't really doing much media watching. But I did make time to, catch the finale of Curb Your Enthusiasm. You know, I've watched every episode this season. And it's, you know, the end of an era. It's the end of the Seinfeld era.
Yeah. 20 plus years of Larry David doing Curb, right? Yeah.
Plus, if you add, you know, the years of Seinfeld, it's sort of that his influence over American comedy has lasted decades and it's pretty much over now. Yeah. He's almost 80 years old. I haven't seen every episode of Curb. I watched for the first couple of seasons and then I fell off of it. I came back for the Seinfeld season and watched every episode since then.
Yep.
I need to go back and watch it. Although when you look at old clips where he's like in his 50s, it's freaky.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in my mind, since watching it so recently, he's in his 70s. And, you know, to see him as like a 54-year-old guy doing it, it's a little weird.
I mean, good for him. That's where you aspire to. He's still trim.
he's real.
He's got
thin.
That walk.
I don't want to spoil it because you guys haven't seen it, but I thought it ended appropriately.
I know it happens. So
yeah.
You can tell me. I'm probably not going to watch it, so it's fine.
You're never going to watch it?
I mean, not anytime soon. I don't watch it. I watched the Seinfeld season. I watched one after that. And somewhere in there, I was like, I think this show is stressful.
Really? I don't find it stressful at all. It's not like The Office. It's technically cringe comedy, but it's so not that vibe. It's basically like watching Seinfeld.
I could just watch Larry and JB Smoove interact.
Right. I don't find any of the situations to be stressful because, they're so far removed from the everyday's like interactions. It's like the problem.
But I'm more with Josh in that I'm not watching it on the regular. Like I haven't watched any of the season yet. It's on the list. I will get to it eventually at some point.
I
know it's not going anywhere. So
Connor said something about like one of the episodes being like absolutely perfect in Seinfeldy, and I watched that one. I don't remember what it was, but it was very. I want to say it was the fourth episode. It was really funny. I enjoyed it. I think it was. I didn't like too much of it. You know what I mean? Like if I watched a bunch in a row, I was like, all right, I've had enough for now. That happened to me with Sunny once too. So it's not like.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'd binge it. I mean, I watched one episode a week for.
When there's so much, right? And especially like if you're not on it currently, like, you know, like I watched the Seinfeld season that bopped in and out since, but it's just like when there's so much, it does fall under my like kind of overwhelming, I'll get to it at some point kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But I love Larry David and I love the humor with it. I just love the ridiculousness of the scenarios. They're just very, very funny.
Over the years, it's the place to go, right, as an actor. So, you know, they had a lot of big guest stars this season. John Hamm is in it quite a bit. Vince Vaughn became a sort of a regular, taking the place of Super Dave Osborne. You know, he's a really good improviser, so he holds his own on that show.
And, of course, the late Richard Lewis.
Richard Lewis is terrific. Conan O'Brien made an appearance.
Oh, that was the one that I watched. It was about whether he was going to who was going to leave each other money in their will.
Oh, the Richard Lewis one. Yeah.
And then he died like the next week.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, imagine doing a show like that with your best friend that you knew from childhood and then going all the way through your end of your life. It's really emotional watching it from that context.
Yeah.
I thought it was a strong finale. Finales are difficult. And that was a really good article in the New York Times after the show came out about how we as a obsessive pop culture overemphasize finales. Like,
yep, if the
finale's not good, then we see the whole show was bad. Like, people look back on Game of Thrones as a failure, even though everyone had so much fun watching it for 10 years.
Yep.
Because of the last couple episodes, they discount the entire experience.
I wouldn't even say the finale. I would say the last season, once they pass the... Now we're getting Game of Thrones. But
even
once
that
they,
doesn't negate the previous 9 years.
No, it doesn't, but it definitely stings. Like,
it's a Battlestar Galactica effect.
Yeah, someone who did an entire podcast about finales, there definitely is a heavier weight on that last episode because it's your last kiss. You know, well, it's your last moment with that show.
Ending the story. You have to stick the story.
I do know how Curb ended, read a lot of articles and all this sort of stuff, and I do love and think it's very funny, going back to the Seinfeld season, that Larry continues to be defined and choose to define by the Seinfeld experience and all that, and choosing to revisit that topic again in this season, it just shows how much of a weight that must be on his and Jerry Seinfeld's shoulders of like living with like this thing that we did, and the fact that they can extract a ton of humor out of it, I think is bonus, right?
Yeah. It also has a sort of a perfect final scene for the show itself. It's sort of the only way it could have ended. So anyway, I really enjoyed the show. It's one of my favorite shows when it's on. One of the most important and best comedy shows of the last 25 years.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here? We'll see.
On the show or in life?
I thought you were doing a segue.
Yes.
Last month, we did the What Should We Watch Challenge, in which each of us talked about shows on our to-watch list. The other two guys voted and made them watch two episodes of one of those shows. Now we're going to report back after having watched. Did anybody watch more than two?
Yes.
Okay.
You did not.
I only watched two.
You did not watch two? Or
I only watched two.
Oh, you only watched two. Yeah, no, I'm three in.
Did you only watch two because that was the assignment? Or because, well, I guess that would have to do with your
thing. No, because I had a lot of things going
on. That's so fine.
I was like, I have to watch two at least. And then
I feel like you would have been like, that's two. I don't need to do more for now. And it's not part of the assignment.
Well, I guess that'll come out in the discussion whether or not you're going to watch any more.
I recognize that.
Ron, you started off. You watched three episodes of your show, which was what?
Yes, Monarch Legacy of Monsters. Yeah, good, not great.
Apple TV Plus. What's the premise?
The premise is it's in the world, in the canon of the current Titan Monsters, King Kong, Godzilla movies that are happening.
It takes place directly after the 2014 movie.
Correct.
Did you watch that?
No, I did not.
Okay.
But I looked up to see what happened in it. And the first episode does feature John Goodman running through Skull Island, which ties back to the King Kong movies that John Goodman was in. And I did see that movie. So like I did understand the tie, but basically this is a post Godzilla world where Godzilla has attacked. It's known. And it's kind of focusing on the people living in that world where there's a threat of Godzilla. And it is bouncing back in time to the 50s when the scientists who discover Godzilla and the other Titan monsters make the discovery. And basically the main premise is that the woman who's also in Shogun, whose name I forget, but Josh, you know her.
Anna Sawai?
Yeah.
She's New Zealander.
She travels from San Francisco to Japan because her father has passed away and he kind of lived, you know, he was from Japan and kind of she got the sense that he was living a bit of a double life because she found a set of keys and she goes to his apartment and discovers another wife and a son. And turns out he had a family in Japan and a family in the States. And then she and the son embark on the journey of trying to figure out what he was working on when he died, because they found all these mysterious files related to the Monarch Company, which is the company that was established in the 50s to track and be the response to these Titan monsters. So you've got the time jumping between the 50s and present day. You've got Wyatt Russell playing an army corporal or whatever in the 50s who's babysitting these scientists and helps set up Monarch. And then you've got Kurt Russell in the present day playing Wyatt Russell's character in the present day, right? So you've got a little, you know, father-son kind of action. And my main takeaway from this is that sometimes I forget how great Kurt Russell is.
He's terrific.
And when he's on screen, you hear it sizzling, right? And then every time he's not on screen, it's like, oh, well, I want him to come back. And I thought he retired after that Santa Claus movie. Did I just make that up?
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure he did that Santa Claus movie for Netflix and it was like, I'm out. And
he did a sequel, didn't he?
They did a sequel, yeah. And then after that, he was like, I'm done acting. But I guess he came back to work with his son or do whatever.
73.
It's very intriguing, very in a Lost kind of way, and that there's a mystery and you get these little clues and you wonder what does it mean, and then there are reveals, and it's, you know, Matt Fraction is one of the showrunners on it, one of the head writers, so it definitely has the comic book episodic style, episode ends on a cliffhanger and you can't wait to get the next one kind of style. I probably would have watched this if it wasn't, I mean, it was on my to watch list and you guys chose what it was. Like, this is something that, like, even though I'm not a huge Godzilla fan or King Kong fan, it is intriguing enough, something I would be happy to watch. So overall, thumbs up. But not the greatest thing since sliced bread.
I watched two of them, maybe a bit more. Same kind of thing, though. Like, I just slowed down on that because I was like, I got to read the subtitles, so I can't. And I really liked it, like, more than I thought, because I really have been disappointed by a lot of the Godzilla things. One thing that I really liked the most about it was, like, this sort of humdrum attitude of living in a world with Godzilla. Like, when they're walking outside in Tokyo and the alarms go off and, like, a Godzilla-shaped light goes and they have to go underground, and it's just like, you accept it. It's a part of life.
How do you go to work? There's a giant dinosaur on the planet.
They have Godzilla alarms, the whole defense system.
How do you, like, justify
it? I think that every time people go to work in San Francisco, I was like, anytime, could just liquefy and sink.
Or now New York with our earthquake center that we live in now.
Did you get this one on film?
No, I didn't. I was telling a lot of people.
Me too.
Are you sticking with it? You're going to finish it?
Yeah, I'm going to finish it. I'm going to stick with it for sure.
All right. Josh?
I was assigned The Gentleman on Netflix. I knew it was somehow related to the film The Gentleman, which was a Guy Ritchie film. One of the last movies I saw before the pandemic started. And I didn't know what it was. And I don't know, for some reason in my head, I had thought, like, Guy Ritchie was like, maybe he's kind of lame now. Or I don't know. I feel like that was the pervading idea. I don't know why. I think he did a couple of movies no one really thought about. But I enjoyed the hell out of it, is my point. I was like, oh, right. That was like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Snatch. You know, like, that's his formula and it's awesome. And so I didn't really know what this was going to be. And it's a lot like it is to Gentleman movie as the Fargo show, like the first season was to Fargo. It's kind of a similar story about many of the same themes, but in a new telling with new people and slightly different circumstances. So, oh, God, I can't remember his name. He was Henry in the Time Traveler's Wife show.
Theo
from White Lotus.
Yeah.
Theo James. Yeah, he was great in the White Lotus season two.
And he's the second son of a lord, a duke, I believe, in England, and his dad dies. And we sort of start on the reading of the will of his dad, and it turns out that he is being promoted to duke over his brother, and his brother's a rich partying drug addict.
Does it work that way?
Asshole. What do I know? So, like, he inherits this giant country house, and he doesn't really use, you know, he's a good dude. He was a soldier. He was in the army. Actually, that's the first that we see of him. I think he's directing traffic in his army uniform, and a car drives up. He's like, your dad's dead. Basically, you find out a couple of things very quickly, is that his brother is in massive debt to bad English gangsters, and everybody knows that English gangsters are the scariest white people on earth.
Liverpudlian, I believe.
Yeah, right? No, yeah. The farther north you get, the scarier they are, according to popular fiction that we get in America. And at the same time, you find out there's a gigantic marijuana growing operation going on underground on his land, and his father had been profiting him for years, and things just get out of control. And I mean, basically, that is the deal, is that the stakes keep getting raised, and there's a really cool lady who's in charge of the pot operation, and she's in the crime world, and he has to sort of get up on it. But there's no, like, anxiety or worry about it. It's just like, we've got to deal with these things. And then something else goes wrong, and somebody's head is in a bag, and, you know, everything goes wrong that can. And then the first episode I watched, I was like, this really feels a lot like Guy Ritchie. And it turns out that he had directed it, too. I didn't know that he was
You didn't know it was a Guy Ritchie series?
I knew that it was based on his other movie and that he was involved in terms of producing. I didn't read any credits or anything, but I didn't know that he'd actually directed that episode. And what was interesting about the first episode is that you didn't really know what it was. And it starts off pretty tame. It doesn't get Guy Ritchie-ish for a while. And, like, that keeps growing. So right at first, I was like, this doesn't feel like Guy Ritchie. It's a little more subdued. And then as it keeps going, it gets up there further and further. But it's really interesting. It's just like Fargo. They managed to grab a lot of these themes and ideas and just twist them and recouch them a little bit while still, you know, basically, you know, the movie Gentleman was, there was a pot operation and there were super rich people involved and there was something that was taken. They were trying to find a place to do it. So they found, you know, the landed gentry had a space that made sense. So all those same things, but they're just twisted around a little bit here. And really, like, the thing is the raising of the stakes and just how wacky and violent and stupid things get. There's an amazing villain who's like the leader of a gang and also a super fundamentalist priest. And he's terrifying. great show. I've watched three. I'm definitely going to keep going.
So I'm four in on it.
Maybe four. I don't remember. What's the one where he loses the van? Is that the third or fourth episode?
He loses the van. That's the third one, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that's the last one I watched. There's a lot in them, so it's hard to tell.
It might be the fourth one. Let me see how deep I am. I had to like twist my wife's arm. I'm like, come on, let's give it a shot or whatever. Yeah, I'm on episode five. So yeah, so episode three must be losing the van because then I just watched episode four. And at first, the violence was a thing. Like, it is a violent show, much like Guy Ritchie. You know, like, there's some shocking kind of violence that happens. Not a ton, but still.
It's like cartoon violence, though.
Yeah, exactly. Agreed. In the crime vein and that sort of thing. What's been great over watching the first four episodes is it went from, like, me trying to twist her arm, getting through those first two episodes, because it's kind of, it's a two-parter, right, the first two. And then by the fourth episode, like, my wife's like, let's watch The Gentlemen. Like, she's getting into it.
It's super entertaining.
What I think is fascinating is that, much like Monarch, you know, kind of prefer, is that it is very episodic in nature, and that so far, you know, four episodes in, it has been like problem of the week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, how are they going to get out of this problem now? And how are they going to do this and navigate the underworld to do it? And it is so fast paced and it can be tension building. Like, there is real tension in how are they going to get out of it? Are they going to be okay? Like, that sort of thing. And it's, I'm enthralled. I think it's great.
It's great. It's a blast. Yeah. Yeah. Did you like the movie?
I never saw the movie. Oh. So I'm gonna watch the movie after I watch this. So,
I think if I recall correctly, this was the original intention, was that it was supposed to be a TV series and that didn't work out. So they made it into a movie and now they're back where they originally started.
Interesting.
If I recall the proper Guy Ritchie film correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's a blast. I mean, I've had a ton of fun watching it.
I like his movies. Even the ones that aren't better than the others are still kind of fun. They're always breezy and funny. Yeah. And sometimes they're terrific.
The last one about Jake Gyllenhaal in the war zone, was that like a serious movie? The Covenant? Because his movies are always kind of comedies, really.
Guy Ritchie's The Covenant, I did not see that one.
Yeah. Wrath of Man.
He has a new one coming out, new World War II one.
The Ministry of Warfare. That looks like I will definitely see that.
Yeah, that's my kind of film. But Snatch
and Lock Stock are, you know, they're classics.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Rock and Roller, I really like.
Oh, I don't know that I saw that.
Yeah, that was a good
one. Sherlock Holmes was fine, but wasn't like that kind of movie.
I like his breezy style. Uh-huh. All right, so we're two for two. We're two for two.
Yeah, Joshua, I assume you're going to continue to watch this?
Absolutely, yes.
Yep, cool. Two for two.
All right, so I was assigned Drops of God, also on Apple TV+. This came from Ron originally. Drops of God, based on a manga series, is a family and business drama about a wine expert, sort of the preeminent wine expert in the world, who dies, and he's going to leave his fortune, his vast wine collection, and all to either his estranged daughter or his star pupil, his estranged daughter being a French woman named Camille, and then his Japanese student, Issei. Right now, it's a competition. They both drink this glass of wine, and they have to identify it in 1 month's time. The problem being, Camille cannot drink wine. She has a physical aversion to it. She gets sick. She passes out. Her nose bleeds. So away we go. I really like it. It's very, very good.
Right?
It's in French. It's in Japanese. It's in English. The main actress, Fleur Geffrier, is doing it all in three different languages. It's really impressive. Right now, it's a little unbalanced. And I know I'm only two in, but it's like 80% of the time we're spending with her as opposed to Issei.
Yep.
Like, are we supposed to be rooting for her? Because we're spending all of our time with her. And he's not portrayed as the bad guy, but he's certainly not getting the same time to find sympathy with, because we're not spending hardly any time with him at all. But I'm hoping that changes in a bit, because I think he's an interesting character and I like him a lot. But right now we're spending all of our time with her.
I do not want to spoil any of the journey for you.
Yeah. No,
I'm not going to tell you whether that continues or not, or either thing. That is not, I'm not telegraphing anything. Will you keep watching?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I think we're going to watch one right after this. You know, I love wine, and there's one episode where I learned a lot. I was like, oh, really? That's what that means. Yeah. Like, they were teaching her how to identify wine, because she was brought up to have almost a superpower, which was like the super smell. She had super taste.
Her father has similar, was in, you know, not only was it in her genetics, but then he trained her with what he knew, and
she developed this aversion because of something that happened, and she stopped drinking, and suddenly she's lost all her abilities. So they're having to retrain her how to identify wine. And
in a month,
I was learning a lot. Yeah, I was like, what that color means. Okay. But everyone's really interesting. And, you know, I think one of the themes that's running through a lot of these shows we're talking about is sort of peeks into other cultures, right? So Shogun is in Japanese a lot. It's about feudal Japan. Drops of God takes place in France and Japan, Tokyo, and small town in France. And
wine, you know, appreciate, like, which admittedly, I'm like, I joke, like, I know nothing about wine. Right. You stick any bottle of wine in front of me, I can't tell you if it's good or bad because I don't know what it is, you know, and so.
Well, yeah, ultimately, it only matters if you like it or not. But it's an interesting subculture and it's an interesting kind of show. It's not a genre show, at least so far. Yep. you know, other than having, you know, really well-developed palate, no one's got superpowers. Yep. It's just a show about these two people vying for this fortune. The Japanese guy, Issei, this is what he wants to do, but he's got a family business that they don't want him to be involved in wine. They want him to run the family business. There's tension there. His grandfather's a fucking asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's really good, and none of them are actors that I'm familiar with. Like, everyone on the show is a face I've never seen before.
Did you watch Monsieur Spade?
Yes.
Then you will recognize one actor.
Okay, well, I haven't gotten that far yet. But so far, everyone is someone I haven't seen before. And it's a whole interesting culture of people. Like, there's an Italian guy living in Tokyo.
Who's fantastic.
Great, but he's Italian. He speaks Japanese. And like, it's like this look at this really sort of multicultural world where there's a whole French, I don't say expats, but there's a whole French community in Tokyo because they do all the wine. So there's guys speaking French, they're changing to Japanese, and they're speaking in English.
The Italian guy and the shaved head Japanese woman become two of my like off the main plot favorite characters.
Super compelling. I really like it. I've been telling everybody in LA that I've been watching it and liking it that they should watch it as well.
I'm glad you liked it.
Where are you going? I'm headed to the Valley. I haven't told anybody up there.
Yeah, I got to get to the Valley, and then I got to get to the Inland Empire.
South Bay. It's a big day.
Yeah, it's a lot. I got a banner that runs behind my car. You know, again, this is another like high-quality, top-notch Apple TV show, which has definitely become the HBO of streaming services.
And no one's watching it.
Is that true, or is that you saying
Yes, it's true.
Yeah, no, it's true. Their viewership percentage is lower than Tubi.
Tubi's blowing up right now.
Right, I mean, that's like, what I mean. It's lower than
it's
Tubi.
It's lower than Pluto, I think.
Lower than Pluto.
Yeah, yeah. G.I. Joe, real American hero. That's why. It's there.
That's all just Josh watching G.I. Joe all day long. It's many TVs. There's like five or six shows on Apple TV right now, like I mentioned earlier. I need to finish watching The New Look, which was terrific. I just fell off.
According to Forbes in February, Apple TV Plus has roughly 25 million people, which is under ESPN Plus at 26, Peacock at 28, Hulu at 48, Paramount Plus at 63, Max at 95, Disney Plus at 150, Amazon at 200, Netflix at 260. So it's definitely on the bottom.
It's a good show, though. Yeah. And you don't have to be into wine. Ron's not into wine. It's just an interesting family drama about these disparate people who are all connected through this wine expert and the fallout from his death.
It's a show about connections.
Yeah.
And the connection with wine, the connection with memory, the connection with family. Like it goes in that direction. And so I'm so glad you dug it, Connor. That's awesome.
Really complex mind palaces. But I like it. It's very good. So Drops of God, Apple TV Plus. I'm definitely going to finish watching it. So there you go. That's the conclusion of our exciting game that we call the What Should We Watch Next Challenge. Thanks for playing, everybody.
I would like to do that again, like maybe in like 6 months or something like that, because I still my two watch list is not going away.
So in the remaining time left, we all watched Dune Part 2 eventually.
Eventually. When did everyone see it? I saw it opening weekend.
I don't know when it came out. I saw it last week. Maybe a week before. I don't know.
And Connor, when did you see it?
When did I see it? Sometime after it came out, because I think I was out of town when it came out.
My deal was just that, like, I was like, I really want to go to that. And then time passes. And then I was like, oh, I have a time. Like, the first time I was available, I was like, I'm going tonight to do this
thing.
Oh, I saw it on the 23rd. I saw it the week after it came out because I had GDC in the middle.
Josh, that reminds me of, like, Alex Garland's Civil War. I was like, oh, that's out. Shit, yeah. I need to go see that. Like, I didn't even know it was coming out, right?
I want to see that, but I also don't want to see that.
Same. But I like Alex Garland.
All right, let's talk about Dune Part 2. Okay, so Dune. In preparation for Part 2, I rewatched Part 1 because
I saw it on the 27th.
So yeah, Josh and I saw it around the same amount at the same time that week. Part 1, I barely remembered. It was during the lockdown. It was one of those big releases that came out simultaneously on HBO Max, and I watched it at home.
Oh, I saw it in the theater.
Right. You could have, but I didn't.
I did. I braved it.
I'm glad I did, because I just didn't remember much. And I'm not just Ron's a Dune guy, right? You've read the books.
Yep. I read the books in middle school, so yeah.
You watched I saw the original film once, I think. I don't remember anything about that either.
I read the books in middle school, and then right as I was into Twin Peaks and discovering David Lynch, I watched David Lynch's Dune. And even at that point, I was like, what the fuck is this? Right?
Yeah.
Sting? And then really haven't, I wouldn't say I'm not a Dune head. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like going to the Dune Con and all this sort of stuff, but like, I still had a familiarity with it. Saw the first film in the theater because I was like, oh yeah, I definitely want to see it. And then I just went to the second one when it came out. I didn't feel the need to rewatch the first one, although I did go back and watch it after I saw the second one because I wanted to. Part of my thing about Dune 2 was just like the immersiveness and what Villeneuve, like the look of it. I just wanted to be in that world a little longer. So
it's close. That was close. I feel like you guys might be crazy about this, but I feel like when we were kids, if you were like super into Dune, that was like a next level nerd thing. Like it was
definitely like there's the echelon. There's like comics,
Star Trek,
Star Wars, then like Lord of the Rings, Tolkien, and then Frank Herbert. Dune is like above
like the top of the heap
or the bottom of the funnel,
right?
Because there's the least number of people.
I just was not into it.
And it was funny getting down this thing. Like, I never was a big Tolkien. Like, I skipped over I never bothered reading it. But it was going from Frank Herbert was then my next jump was to William Gibson and Neal Stephenson.
Where was Asimov in there?
I skipped Asimov, like not until later, much later. I didn't read Asimov in middle school and early high school at all. But like, I remember reading Dune and finishing Dune and wanting something else sci-fi, and then discovering Snow Crash, and then discovering Mona Lisa Overdrive, and then I was like in that world for the rest of high school.
Did you read Heinlein in high school?
No, I've only read one.
No, I read Heinlein in college. I didn't pick up Heinlein until college.
I jumped over Dune to Asimov and Heinlein in high school, and I don't know. Dune had I think it was partially the movie. Dune had a stink on it.
I think it was the movie.
In the 80s. I think it was the movie. It had a stink on it. It was the movie,
for sure. Yeah.
So anyway, Dune, part two. I thought this was okay. I thought part one was way better.
I'm right there with you. I think it was better than okay. I think it was really, really good. A lot of the rhetoric around the week or two before it opened, coming up to it, was putting it on a level that I don't think it is on that level.
Yes.
I think the hype train's kind of started. I do think it is masterfully shot, looks and sounds beautiful, but story-wise had some challenges, decision-wise had some challenges, casting-wise had some challenges. And I walked out of it, I came home to watch the first movie because I wanted to exist in that world a little longer, but this did not change the world as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I have no history with Dune, really. I never saw the movie. I never read the books, just kind of was aware of it because of the world, you know, the circles we travel in. And I really enjoyed the first one, like, after I was finished with it. Like, the whole time I'm watching it, I was like, I think I like this. And then by the end, I remember this. We talked about it. But, like, I got to the end of the first movie, and it hadn't occurred to me that there were more movies. Because it was just called Dune.
Right.
We were probably, like, 2-something hours into it. And I was like, there's no way they can wrap up.
Well, they said part one on the screen.
You always point out things that I didn't see. I don't know if that's something you've noticed, but we're going to have to just...
I did pick up part one when I saw it. We're
going to have to deal with that. It doesn't change my experience. And so when I realized there was going to be more, I was like, oh, that's great. So when this was, you know, sort of like it's coming out now, I was very excited to see it in the theater because I didn't get to see the first one in the theater, and you can immediately see how that would make a difference.
Oh, yeah.
So I was really looking forward to it. I have no idea what anybody thought about it. I think I got the idea that people liked it.
I talked to people who say it was the best sci-fi movie ever made.
That's absurd.
Yeah, I agreed.
I saw it in IMAX. I saw it at the Chinese theater here. I thought it was okay in terms of I had a good time. I thought it was fun. But rewatching the first one especially, it lacked a lot of the heart of the first one and characters that were more interesting. A lot of the characters that were the best characters in the first one are not really the second one. And so you're left with a lot of scowling.
My biggest challenge with part two was that I found, again, visually stimulating, looks awesome, fantastic. I felt like the middle third was caught spinning its wheels, where it was, you know, Timothy Chalamet as Paul Atreides is learning how to become a Fremen and doing all this sort of stuff and getting accepted by them and, you know, kind of doing all this stuff and acknowledging that there is a prognostication that he will go south. And if he goes south, he will get millions of followers, but it'll end poorly and they'll die. And so he spends an hour plus of the movie saying, I can never go south. I can never go south. I can never go south. And it's like, well, I'm going south, you know? And it was just like, whoa, it just kind of felt very kind of head jerk, you know? And then you build up all this time with the relationship with Zendaya. And then the geopolitical deal making via marriage happens at the end. And that is very, you know, whiplashy.
There's a lot of whiplashing stuff, especially when I watched the first one,
which I feel like is the byproduct of trying to make sense of very dense text in a short amount of time.
I understand that. Yeah. They also changed the timeline completely because I believe in the book, it's like years pass between the events of the first film and the events of the second film.
I'm telling you, give me a timeline as I'm watching it. Let me know how much time passed.
He said they basically compress it to months.
It was less than a year, is my understanding.
In the books, you know, Paul and Shani have like kids and stuff. And
right.
But when you're watching the first one, Javier Bardem's character is like super serious and super capable and badass. And then the second one becomes sort of comic relief out of nowhere, which was a strange swerve for him. I like Timothy Chalamet a lot as an actor. I just can't buy him as a physical threat. He just looks like if you blew on him too hard, he'd fall over. And it's tough because he's a really compelling actor and he's a really good actor. But in terms of an action star, he just doesn't sell it for me.
Yeah,
I don't understand how Josh Brolin's character wasn't killed.
But that's in the books.
I know, but it just never makes any sense. The last time you see him in the first one, he's running into a crowd of enemies. Yeah.
Overall, the whole movie was lacking Duncan Idaho.
Best name.
Yeah, yeah. Best name. And honestly, there's an argument to be made that he is the main character of all the Dune books.
Is he the Wedge Antilles of the Dune era?
Yeah, but no, Connor, my casting choice I was going to make, Christopher Walken pulled me right out of it.
Well, that's the thing. He made no attempt to not be Christopher Walken from A Story of Queens, which I kind of respect because he sticks to his guns, but also it was a little
that
jarring.
Was like Patton Oswalt in Manhunt.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, massive respect for Christopher Walken, think he's great and all stuff like that. It pulled me out of it so fast and then could not take him seriously. That's the one casting role where I was just like, not a good choice.
My take was probably less critical in that. I was there to sort of like enjoy the spectacle, and I can sort of point the things I like. I think there was definitely the plot ramped up exponentially. Sort of as we got near the end, it felt like we weren't really moving. He was in the desert for a long time. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm taking over. And I was like, well, that seemed to happen quickly. But I don't know that I would have, you know, I don't know how should have been done or whatever. Like, I noticed it. But just I haven't seen a sci-fi movie like this in a really long time, in that I think it's a very well-produced and beautiful, high-dollar sci-fi that takes itself completely seriously, is in no way ironic. There's no eye winking. Everybody in it is being full on chewing the scenery, arch, you know, that doesn't seem to happen a lot anymore. And the spectacle of the thing, I thought, was really pretty fascinating to see all of that laid on the screen and sort of building that world out. And because, you know, we're comic book sci-fi nerds, and you know that like Dune is one of those things that is sort of a little part of it, isn't everything. And so to sort of see that story played out and just like through the whole thing, I was like, oh, George Lucas did like this. You know, it's a lot of Star Wars. And, you know, it kind of, I was like, I kind of wish I didn't know that because it's just like, oh, his father, I see Sandworld, spice, you know, all of it, sandworms, you know, like it just kept going. And I kind of, you know, like, oh, Lucas is just a nerd. I want to do this stuff. It felt like a big sci-fi movie. And in that way, I'm not really there for a perfect plot. I'm really there just to live in there for a little while. I really enjoyed it. It was like, I remember the first one is feeling really long, probably because I had to watch it in multiple settings in my house because somebody can't stay awake very well, not me. But this one, you know, I was like, all right, I'm going to settle in. I'm going to be here for a while. But it didn't really feel like that. I'm excited for the next one.
Yeah. I mean, it's so immersive, and you know, the stuff I've read or I've heard about Villeneuve and the approach, you know, the fact that, you know, he drove the crew crazy because he wanted to shoot in natural light as much as possible. And so, like, you know, you guys know how hard production is and all, you know, so like given the option to go to Atlanta and film on a big green screen stage or go to these locations and get the sun in the right, like he chose the latter, right? Which I think is so great. And it's funny because like there was a bunch of, he got very salty on the press tours around Dune and stuff like that and made some comments about like, doesn't really believe in dialogue. In fact, it'd be better if actors just kept their mouth shut, you know?
Like George Lucas,
there you go.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely a connection there because he has a visual look in his head of what he's trying to create. And I respect the hell out of that because I think, you know, he really achieved that and created this alien world for us to go visit in to watch this story. And the biggest plus about this movie is how it looks and how it feels and all the production design and sound design that goes into it to make this truly alien world accessible over-succeeded as far as I'm concerned in that regard. Story, you know, suffered a little.
Yeah, I think you and I are in the same flat. It's a gorgeous movie and the sound was incredible, especially in a giant theater. I wonder if watching it again altered my thinking, because I think the first film, I remember watching it and being like, oh, it was fine. I remember putting it in the middle of my list that year of Best Picture nominees, like putting it like smack dab at 5 or whatever, and not thinking about it again. And that reason why I rewatched it, because I didn't remember a single thing about it and really enjoying it the second time. So maybe, you know, in another setting, it'll come across better. But I didn't have a bad time. I certainly had a fun time watching it. I never felt the length. I never looked at my watch.
I mean, I think we're all in agreement that it is not the, you know, the greatest thing to ever happen to sci-fi film, as many people have been saying, which I feel like that rhetoric has died down now that the time has passed.
Gone sort of a week passed. It's over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I still think the first one's better, though.
Yeah, I think
it's more compelling. The story's more compelling. The actors are more compelling.
If it's all part of one story, it's just part of the middle thing. I don't tend to separate them into movies like that as much. I don't know. Like, for whatever reason, all of my, like, super hypercritical stuff has moved into comics entirely. And so if I get to go out and see the movie, I'm like, I'm just glad to be here. Yeah.
That's good. That's a good way to be.
Is Austin Butler still talking?
I had no idea who that was the entire time. I just was staring at him going, why can't I place it? It was driving me nuts.
Yeah.
But I didn't look.
Good cast. I mean, Rebecca Ferguson's terrific. Dave Bautista plays his role. He's good. Florence Pugh, Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah, it's a great cast.
Stellan Skarsgård's amazing. You know. He's super disgusting and creepy, and that's not how I think of him. So, you know, like, fully committed to just being that thing.
It did pick up when Josh Brolin added a bit of swagger to the characters.
It's not super fun. I mean, it's not like, woohoo, here we go. You know, it's not.
No. But, the ending battle was incredible, and, you know, the knife fight scene at the end was okay. Again, I just don't buy Chalamet as being a problem for anybody, but, you know, Zendaya is really compelling. They're all, it's all really compelling. It's just, overall, I thought it was fine. It was good.
It just fell a little short.
Yeah.
I thought, talk about finales or whatever, like, part one was really, really strong, and part two felt like it had to do a bunch of things in order for it to happen, and it made decisions about the adaptation of the book to get to that last scene. So I understand it. I understand it, of course, but, like, it still felt a little clumsy at times.
This is the first book, right? Part one and two are the first book.
How many books are there?
Correct, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really? So, like, this isn't going to be, like, in...
Well, the thing is that, like, I wouldn't necessarily, the next book isn't the one, like, I don't know, like, I'm curious what he's going to do. So there are 23 books totally in Dune, right? Although there's only six that are that Frank Herbert wrote. But, like, they go in crazy directions in the next book. Like, it goes so far into the future. And that, so I don't necessarily know. It's not going to be a strict adaptation if they make another film.
It's going to be called Dune Messiah.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's just going to be a third film. They're not going to keep going. Yeah. Or at least not with Denis.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's based on. I don't know Dune well enough to know what that means.
The second book is Dune Messiah. So, like, Dune came out in 65, Dune Messiah came out in 69. So that makes sense if they're sticking to the Herbert kind of stuff. But, like, Dune Messiah goes real crazy real quickly.
Hollywood Reporter headline, Dune 3 is a big challenge. The next book isn't that good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Whatever. It's fine. I'm not concerned about it. I mean, look, I think it's good to have these kind of big spectacles. I think it's great that people are going to see it. It's made a lot of money. I think it's brought people to the theaters. All these things are pluses in my book, so I'm happy about it. Even if it's not my favorite movie of all time, I thought it was a lot of fun, and I'm glad people are going to see it.
But yeah, I mean, it was the blockbuster of the first quarter.
Yeah.
Right? And it was a great time in the movies as far as I'm concerned. Like, I definitely had an enjoyable time.
Dune Part 2, $683 million worldwide.
I mean, the good news about the next movie is that presumably we'll get more Duncan Idaho.
Seriously, wasn't he dead? Like, he just died. He showed up and I was like, I now remember.
So was Brolin's character.
Oh, wait. No, it was Duncan Idaho.
Momoa.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, you're right. So who's Josh Brolin's character's name?
Gurley or something? Gurley?
Yeah, Gurley. Yeah.
Gurney.
Yeah, Gurney, okay. That's what it is. Yeah.
Okay, right. Momoa died in the hallway fighting. I came to the hallways fighting all the bad guys.
What's the star rating then on out of five?
3.5 ratings.
I'll say 4.
Ratings.
Oh, interesting. I'm going to say 3.25. No, I'm sorry. 3.75 is what I meant.
All right. I'm just working half steps.
That's fine. We like to get granular.
Yeah, I know.
3.7625.
Oh, yeah. No, if you have to. Like, it doesn't.
Well, I've been thinking about this for a month and a half.
Right.
So,
it doesn't go right here. You get there. It's okay.
So it was fun. Like, it was fun. I don't discount the good time of the movies it was. Even if I was a little perplexed with coming out of it, like, that was the best movie of all time?
No. Yeah. That's the short, weird memory of everybody now.
Yeah, that's the latest thing is the greatest thing, right? Yeah.
All right. So check it out if you haven't. They're both fun, worth watching. And they're big, big spectacles. So there you go.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so that was Media Explode 46.
A lot of content in there, Connor. A lot of content just now.
So do we have our production meeting here and talk about doing Star Trek for the rest of the year? Or?
I mean, I think we need to come up more of a plan. But as I said in our chat, I'm on board.
I really want to only talk about Star Trek since, I don't want to bum anyone out, but I don't talk about that. So, and not like I don't talk about it, like I had a bad experience. It's like, oh, he doesn't talk about Star Trek. I got nothing.
We'll figure it out. There's been some discussion about revisiting the original Shatner, Nimoy films.
Movies.
Yeah. I just missed that? Or
You missed it.
Yeah, you missed it.
You missed it. It was in our chat. But that's okay. We'll come back with another episode. We haven't done old mineral movies in 2 years.
We're due. Obviously, we're due. There have been a lot of suggestions of films to do it, but we never landed on one.
Yeah. Maybe Star Trek is
what it is. Do we have to do the first one?
Maybe.
Well, let's discuss it.
Yes. We should discuss, but I think the idea is like starting at the beginning and going all the way up.
No, I'm not committing to a multi-year project of just Star Trek. I veto that.
But Josh, think about it.
You guys can start another
really
show.
Think about it.
It's fine. We have to put advertising somewhere.
But maybe you will find a love for Star Trek deep in your soul.
I really like Star Trek. But not that. Right. Like, I'll watch not one. Like, I'll watch like two. I don't think we need to do two. Two's covered. 3, 4, 5. That's interesting.
Oh, I have to go to 6. 6 ends the story.
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Right. See?
Do you go to 6 or do you go to Generations?
I think 6 ends the story. Generations.
No, if you're talking, you gotta.
6 ends their journey.
You know, like next gen.
I don't want that.
Yeah. All
right. Let's jump right to Nemesis.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, we'll figure out what's next, and then we'll be back in a month to tell you. And until then, you can watch or listen to, not watch. You can watch if you want. You can make it all up in your head, like a movie in your mind. The Pick of the Week show. Every week, Josh and I, sometimes with special guests, talk about the week's new comic books. And then we have other shows like our monthly Splode shows, the Booksplode and the Talksplode shows. Those are our alternating shows. The Booksplode is a book review show. The Talksplode is a Josh interview show. We also will cover movies and TV shows and things like that that are comic related. But also Ron talks about Android.
I do, over on Android Faithful at androidfaithful.com. Every Tuesday it's released.
You should do a pinball show.
Do I want to?
I don't know.
Pinball podcasting is a whole landscape out there. I don't know.
You should do one while playing, just a lot of yelling over a lot of sounds.
No, no one wants to hear that.
I know. These are just free ideas. Take them.
You really should yell over some loud sounds.
And you should be eating cookies while you do it.
Oh, good call.
So, all right. So now I want a cookie. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh, and I made it.
How many O's were in that name?
It's 4? Hard though, because if Josh, you like put a bunch character of O's, it turns into Joosh. So right. It doesn't really work.
That was a video streaming startup from 2008.
Joosh.
Round, round, get around. I get around.
Yeah, get around. Round, round, I get around.
Get around, round, round, I get around.